It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Nearly one in five Americans say they've been let go or had hours cut due to coronavirus. That's this week's Marist poll. States across the country, including Wisconsin, are revising their unemployment insurance program to help people who are struggling with the closure of schools and businesses because of the novel coronavirus. The Department of Workforce Development has new guidelines on COVID-19. Have your hours been reduced or are you getting laid off? Are you seeking unemployment assistance? Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Amy Banicki is Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division in the Department of Workforce Development. Amy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning. And Caleb Frostman is here, Secretary of the Department of Workforce Development. Secretary Frostman, welcome back to you.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me back.
Well, Secretary, let's start with you. We saw the governor yesterday announce changes to the unemployment benefit process to help people who have their work reduced due to the coronavirus. What do these changes mean, especially for your division?
So we're working really hard. We have an awesome team here, Amy included, to make sure that Wisconsinites are being taken care of. But these changes in these extraordinary times are appropriate measures to make sure that we can address COVID-19, both from a public health perspective and from an economic standpoint. So the proposals put forward yesterday by emergency rule remove the work search requirement for folks under unemployment insurance, as well as changing the definition of being available for work, that if folks are laid off due to the COVID-19 public health emergency, that they would be considered available for work. And then the governor is working, as mentioned in the transition there, with the legislature to repeal the one-week waiting period to help folks affected by this public health pandemic receive public unemployment insurance benefits sooner than if they would under the one-week wait that is currently state law.
Explain just briefly here what the work search requirement is and what is being waived here.
Sure. So anytime someone is eligible for unemployment insurance, and Amy, feel free to jump in if I mess this up, but anytime someone is eligible for unemployment insurance, they have to be completing at least 4 work searches per week. And the emergency order put forward yesterday, which aligns with the in public health emergency put forward by DHS and the governor, waives that work search requirement, which would relieve the burden of folks that are, you know, going to be expecting to return to work at the conclusion of this pandemic, and also relieves the burden on employers who would likely be fielding, you know, folks that were filing many, many work searches per week that, you know, would likely return back to the normal job when this pandemic is over.
Amy, what are you seeing right now in your division? Are you keeping up with inquiries? What is it like right now?
It's pretty hectic right now. We're taking a lot of calls, and we are urging people to go to our website, dwd.wisconsin.gov. Many people, actually about 98%, are filing their initial claims online, which is great, so that we can answer those phone calls when they come in.
And so, you know, are you seeing an uptick then, and will you be able to keep up with the demand with your current staffing that you have?
We are absolutely seeing an uptick, and we're doing everything we can with our staff. We also have additional staff trained that hop on the phones when we need them. They have also been working. So we will do everything that we can to answer and help all the citizens of Wisconsin that are calling UI. And it may involve hiring more staff or bringing more staff in from throughout the department.
Amy, explain for us how unemployment compensation works. What is it?
Sure. Well, unemployment is actually a federal state program. So it provides benefits to eligible workers who are unemployed through no fault of their own. That's determined under state law, and they must meet eligibility requirements. So it is an insurance program. It's based on whether or not somebody has worked. So you have to have qualifying wages in order to be eligible. Self-employed folks, for example, would not be eligible for unemployment.
We're talking with Amy Banicki, Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division. Caleb Frostman here as well, Secretary of the State Department of Workforce Development. Taking your questions, have your hours been cut, or is your employer saying that you're going to be laid off soon due to the COVID-19 outbreak? Are you currently receiving unemployment benefits? What questions do you have? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary Frostman, what are the, for someone who is a gig economy worker or in a non-traditional job environment, independent contractors and freelancers, what is the state doing for these people right now?
So we've got a cross-departmental task force, a loose task force going forward. A lot of folks coming together across agencies to try to help those small businesses and help those entrepreneurs that are going to be affected by this, whether that's through a grant program or loan programs. But there's discussions happening at a very high level to make sure that our Main Street businesses and our entrepreneurs that may not qualify for unemployment insurance and programs like that have the assistance they need to not only pay their bills this week, but also next week and the week after that. So folks are thinking big picture, and there's a lot of momentum behind trying to find a way to help Main Street as well as entrepreneurs throughout the state.
We've looked, seen the federal government moving, President Trump saying, trying to get money into the mailboxes of people impacted. What is the timeline that you're seeing in state government to help people affected who don't fall under the guidelines of unemployment compensation as it exists right now?
Yeah, the timeline is as fast as possible. We're working, a lot of folks in state government are working around the clock. The 24-hour emergency command center, which is focusing, of course, on the public health aspect of this, but also on the economic ramifications of COVID-19. So folks are moving as fast as humanly possible to make sure that, not only are Wisconsin families going to be economically stabilized through this, but also our state's economy, that folks are able to pay their bills and to put food on their table, that we also keep the flow of currency going for our Wisconsin businesses.
Let's take John now in Eau Claire, who's joining us. Hi, John. What is your situation like?
Well, right now, I've had my own business for over 20 years.
Oh, I'm sorry. John just dropped. He is self-employed. He's had his own business for over 20 years, and he says he can't work and he doesn't know what to do right now because he doesn't fall under those specific guidelines. Amy, what would you tell John in this situation?
First of all, I really empathize with what he's going through, but what he could potentially do is contact his county government. The county government usually has some programs that can help out folks when they don't qualify for unemployment, so that might be a good resource for him.
And for those who have never filed for unemployment benefits before, where do they start? Where should they begin this process?
They should go to dwd.wisconsin.gov and click on the link for unemployment. We have all kinds of frequently asked question documents out there. We have everything to explain how to file, and then you click a button and you just apply. I encourage anybody who is questioning whether or not they're eligible for unemployment to file a claim. That's the easiest way to find out.
With the restrictions that have been eased since yesterday, Governor Evers' announcement, do you think that it will be easier to get benefits to the people who need it most, Amy?
Yes, I do think that.
How long does it usually take for benefits to kick in?
Well, applying for benefits is a two-step part, so you first have to file your initial claim, and then you get paid based off of weekly claims. So you have to wait until the week is over and then file a weekly claim, and you have to do this every week to make sure that you're eligible each week. So if there are no eligibility issues on the claim, meaning somebody is filing and they have no other issues, we don't pay checks anymore, but payment will go out within 1 to 2 days.
We have Amy Banicki here, Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division in the Department of Workforce Development. We also have Workforce Development Secretary Caleb Frostman here answering your questions on the unemployment situation, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about unemployment insurance on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Unemployment insurance covers a calculated percentage of wages for up to 26 weeks. Benefits are typically about 50% of the average weekly wage of an applicant up to the maximum rate. And last year, the Evers administration attempted to give state unemployment benefits a bump. Right now, that maximum rate an employee can receive after losing a job is $370 a week. What do you want to know about applying for these benefits? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Workforce Development Secretary Caleb Frostman here and Amy Banicki, Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division in the Department of Workforce Development. They both stay with us. Let's take another call now. Tim is here from Madison. Hi, Tim. Oh, and we lost Tim as well. Tim is a seasonal worker in construction and has to go through a waiting period to get unemployment. What does this 1 month unemployment waiting period, I think that is his question, look like? Amy, can you address that?
We don't have a 1 month waiting period. We have a 1 week waiting period.
Okay.
So when you initially file your claim, the waiting week is the first week of the claim in which you are eligible. And that is what the governor is trying to get that law changed so that we can waive that waiting week.
What is, Amy, the WorkShare program? How does that work, and can people use it right now?
Actually, the WorkShare program is designed to help employers retain employees during slow business periods by reducing employees' hours and then allowing those affected employees to file for partial unemployment insurance benefits. So an employer has to apply for that program. So an employee can't. The good thing about the WorkShare, if the employer chooses to do it, is that UI, of course, will pay to replace a portion of their reduced pay, but also it's a requirement that those employers keep providing benefits to those participating workers. So we are encouraging employers who can keep some employees working to contact us and get a WorkShare plan in place.
Secretary Frostman, is the WorkShare program something that you see as a key to keeping Wisconsin's economy going at this point?
Absolutely. I think this is a really smart play for a lot of employers. If they can reduce hours versus lay folks off, and it allows for more employees to stay on the job and those employees to retain their benefits and have their pay be supplemented by unemployment insurance, it's a really smart move for employers. And every conversation we have with our stakeholder groups and private employers includes, trumpeting the benefits of using WorkShare.
Amy, can all the steps to filing unemployment, an application for unemployment benefits, can everything be done online at this point?
Yes. Filing the initial claim is done online. We have about 98% of our claimants doing that right now.
And, a lot needs to happen. A lot of verification needs to happen. How well is your staff equipped to do that remotely? How much of your division is remote right now?
Right now, we only have about 100 staff that are working remotely. All of our operations staff, which are the folks that take the claims and also deal with eligibility issues, they are still in the office and working very hard to make sure that people can get their benefits.
Do you anticipate that changing at all as we see the number of gathering, the number of people to gather keeps getting reduced?
We are hoping to have some of our staff go work remotely. We're working on some technology right now, but hopefully within the next week or two, they will be working remotely, and that should not slow down anything. They'll have the same access that they do currently in the office, and the same phone lines will be open.
Let's take another call now. Charles in Rice Lake has a question. Hi, Charles.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Say, my question is, if I am planning to lay off, partially lay off people, we're having a slowdown in business kind of because of a government mandate, but I don't necessarily need to lay everybody off. Can the people that are going to be partially laid off apply ahead of time for unemployment benefits, or do they have to wait till they're actually laid off, or partially laid off, I should say?
Are you taking part of the WorkShare program by chance?
Well, that's the second part of my question is I was kind of on the phone on hold during the course of that WorkShare discussion, and I missed a part of it. So could you review that? I know you just went over it, but
John, that's for people, for employers who are reducing some of their employees' hours and do want them to be eligible for partial unemployment. So I think it may be the program for you. If you go to our website, again, dwd.wisconsin.gov,
great.
We have a fact sheet out there on WorkShare and some phone numbers that you can call to talk about eligibility for it.
Okay, that sounds great. And if they do get completely laid off, if I know I'm going to lay somebody off completely, can they apply ahead of time knowing that, let's say, March 25th is going to be their layoff date, or did they wait until they're actually laid off?
They should call in that week.
Okay.
It can be earlier in that week, but they should call in that week.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, Charles, thank you. Let's take another question. Mike in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi. So my question is, let's start by saying my employer's been golden through this, and he is paying his employees that are being sent home, so they don't have to file unemployment, but those are ones that are being sent home. Now, I this morning have a couple sniffles, and if I call in and am not forced to go home, I won't get paid. So do I qualify for unemployment even though it will be a self-quarantine at this point for the next – I send an employee home until at least April 6th if things get better. So do I qualify for unemployment having not been forcibly removed from the company?
Amy, do you want to field that again?
Sure, sure. I would encourage you to go ahead and file a claim with what the governor is doing with his order. Yes, most likely, as long as you have other qualifying, you would most likely be eligible.
Mike, thank you for that question. Bill in Manitowoc next. Hi, Bill.
How you doing? Great show. My nephew got laid off about 2 or 3 weeks ago and for some reason hasn't filed unemployment. Is there a time limit between the time you get laid off and the time you file? And I'll hang up the list, and thanks.
Yeah, no, there is not a time limit. Our qualifying, we have to look at certain calendar quarters, so it's always best to file as soon as you get laid off. But if it's been a couple of weeks, no problem. Have them apply online.
Bill, thanks for that question. Secretary Frostman, you know, the current maximum someone can receive is $370 per week. Do you find that problematic? Is that sustainable for families right now?
You know, we do find it problematic, and that's why we brought forward a requested increase in last year's budget. And my math could be wrong, but I believe we haven't increased that since, I believe, 2014. But if you look at our neighboring states, Minnesota, for example, their maximum weekly benefit is almost double that. I think it's like $670. And so, you know, the idea of unemployment insurance is helping folks stabilize economically for themselves, and then also continue to, you know, stimulate their local economies, buying groceries, paying rent, making car payments. And so, you know, for the average Wisconsinite, assuming they get the max, you know, $370 a week is pretty minimal. And so we've continued to push for an increase in that. That was not part of this particular package. We just like to get benefits out to folks faster with fewer headaches at this point. But that $370 is near the smallest among our neighbors and pretty problematic for most Wisconsin families.
Amy Banahy, what happens after 26 weeks of benefits and someone is not back to work? The COVID-19 crisis is not over. What happens then?
Our state program is only 26 weeks, but the federal government can enact emergency or extended benefits, and they are talking about putting that in place at least through the end of the year. But we would have to wait for that because they would then give us some funding, too. But we cannot extend it past 26 weeks at this point.
Secretary Frostman, there is a lot on your plate right now. What are you focused on today, this week, in terms of the COVID-19 crisis? What are your fellow secretaries working on?
Oh, that's a great question. Last night at a moment on a we do at least a daily conference call, and I'm just really proud to be part of this team. We've got incredible folks, like I said, literally working around the clock to make sure we're doing everything we can. I think first and foremost, from a public health perspective and being on the front edge of, you know, making sure we're making the right call for public safety, but also thinking big picture, making sure we're taking care of our staff. The state employs, I think, about tens of thousands of people. I think it's about 30,000 folks. And so making sure we're being smart about taking care of our folks, encouraging them to take care of themselves, you know, something as small as making sure you, you know, go for a lap around the building, get some fresh air, but taking care of our people, making decisions in the best interest of public safety and public health, and then, of course, thinking, you know, the economic ramifications, how we can most be helpful to businesses, big and small, entrepreneurs, Wisconsin working families. And so I've been really, really just pleased and heartened by the governor's leadership on this and the team we have in place to do really good work for folks.
Well, Secretary Frostman, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
And Amy Banicki, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Amy Banicki is Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division in the Department of Workforce Development, and Caleb Frostman is Secretary of the Department of Workforce Development. Coming up, we talk with a behavioral scientist about how we consumers are responding to COVID-19. Have you seen empty shelves of toilet paper or hand sanitizer at your supermarket? Have you been stocking up yourself? Call us with your stories, your questions, 800-642-1234. We'll look at the supply chain and the stockpiling due to COVID-19 right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin highway officials are issuing temporary permits and waiving fees for trucks stocking grocery stores. It's one more the way the state is responding to the COVID-19 pandemic. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Some brick and mortar shops have seen their shelves literally cleared out of toilet paper, hand sanitizer, other items amid this outbreak. The makers of Charmin and Cottonelle say they've ramped up toilet paper production and are able to meet demand. Do you work at a grocery store, a department store, or another business that deals directly with consumers? How are shoppers behaving right now? We're at 800-642-1234. Aradhana Krishna is a behavioral scientist and professor of marketing at the University of Michigan. Her research focuses on how the senses affect consumer perceptions, judgments, and decisions. Aradhana, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for inviting me to your show.
Well, President Trump urged us to ease up on our shopping, on the stockpiling that's going on. What do you make of the president's comments that people don't need to buy so much at this time?
I think it's very appropriate at this time because, as we can see, shelves are being completely cleared out. And besides shelves being cleared out, at the same time, we are seeing a lot of price gouging going on. So the prices are increasing. So it's a question of availability. So people are really buying up and prices are going up. And, you know, so it's kind of interesting. So if you think about, you know, visual cues of demand, so there are these visual indicators of demand, and some of us marketing professors were talking about it, my colleagues at Cornell and Dartmouth, Ellie Kyung and Manoj Thomas. So we were talking about stockouts happening and why they are happening, and we came up with this theory of visual indicators of demand. So think about going to another city, and you're a tourist, and you don't know which restaurant to go to, and you see a line outside one restaurant and you say, oh, that must be a good restaurant and there's a big demand for it. So I think I should go there. And you may know nothing about the food, nothing about the service, but you join that line. So the same sort of thing is happening here. If you go into a store and you feel that a particular shelf is empty, and now with things like toilet paper, if a few people buy toilet paper, that shelf starts looking empty because toilet paper is very bulky. And so when they see the shelf being empty, they say, I think I need to buy toilet paper. And so then other people start buying toilet paper and it is completely sold out.
Oh, like
and once it's sold out.
Someone knows something I don't, therefore I should get in on this.
Yes, exactly right. That's exactly the point. So somebody knows something. So people are buying toilet paper and therefore I should be buying it. And then the same thing happens online.
And online and on social media, you're seeing these images as well. What do they do to our psyche?
So, you know, so many things are happening on social media. So people are informing each other about things, again, which are very salient to them. So when they see things sold out, they start talking to each other and saying, look, this is running out. And, you know, so consumers, of course, I mean, as human beings, we respond to cues in our environment. So we are seeing this in terms of these visual cues of what I call demand. There's a lot of demand for toilet paper. I also think of visual cues of supply. So if you go into a store, and sometimes I feel rationing backfires. So in a retail store, if there's a point of purchase sign saying only three allowed. And so yesterday, for example, a friend of mine went to a store and there were gallons of water with only three allowed per customer. She had no intention of buying water, but she came back with three. So that rationing sign, again, serves as a visual indicator of supply. So people think, again, you know, there's something going on. I don't know about it. They're running out of supply and I should buy three. So it becomes like an anchor, like I have to go in and buy three. So that's the second thing that is going on alongside.
Another thing I want to ask you through this reasoning and what's going on in our head, authorities have been urging people not to hoard products like surgical masks and hand sanitizer. So those can be available to health professionals who need it. Is that kind of reasoning enough to actually persuade a consumer behavior in a crisis?
So, of course, this will vary across consumers. So some consumers might think I need to leave it for health professionals and not go out and buy a surgical mask. But then others might feel that this is an indication, again, of short supply. So I should hoard up. So it could go either way. And I'm seeing countries react in different ways to these shortages. So, for example, In Taiwan, what they did was they announced upfront when masks would be available. So they said, we'll be giving out. So the government was controlling the masks and they said, we'll give out 1 million masks for sale on January 22nd and January 23rd, and then another 1 million masks on January 30th to March 20th every week. And so in this sense, people feel that, yes, there'll be more masks coming. And so it can be controlling the surge of people going and purchasing. And also they can time the release of the mask with their prediction of when as the disease will be spreading. So there are different ways of dealing with it. One is informing the public. One is the government sort of controlling supply in some sense. So it's a very difficult thing to control the demand and supply in this situation.
We're looking at how COVID-19 is affecting consumers with University of Michigan marketing professor Aradhana Krishna as our guide. You can join in. Have you seen any empty shelves at stores? What have you noticed in what other people are buying, how they're buying it? Have you been stockpiling yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Mike now in Franklin with thoughts on this. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi.
What's on your mind?
I've gone. I work third shift, so I left work and made a few stops on the way home. And I did like four or five stores, and every store was completely out of toilet paper. Even flushable wipes and hand sanitizer. Even food. A lot of the food, eggs was a big thing that was missing too on the shelf.
And hand sanitizer, too. You were allowed just one when you did find it.
Yeah. She was just stocking the shelf. And I said, well, I'll grab two. She goes, no, you're only allowed one. I said, okay.
Do you feel like you've been just buying what you need, or have you been trying to stock up?
I've just been buying what I need. And I wanted to get, like, maybe, you know, a large pack of toilet paper that we can... You know, usually you get like maybe a four pack or whatever. I couldn't even get a four pack. I think Sendex was selling toilet paper, but it was like non-tree toilet paper. They're called bamboo toilet paper.
So something you normally wouldn't buy. Aradhana, what are we seeing happening in the supply chain here?
So manufacturers are, of course, trying to ramp up their supply. And they have made public statements. For example, Reckitt Benckiser, the makers of Dettol, and also the Lysol manufacturers have said they're really trying to increase capacity to keep up. But it is difficult for them to keep up with the, you know, so exponentially increased demand over here. Some other manufacturers like Purell have redistributed the supply to areas where they feel it'll be more needed. So they're first going to supply the hospitals and then supply the consumers. So I think the manufacturers and the retailers the manufacturers are responding well, and some retailers are also responding in a nice way by trying to curb the price gouging. So they are, like, eBay has said they will not allow hand sanitizers to be sold on their website. And I think that's a good measure, because we cannot have price increases at this time. And because typically what people say is price increase is fine, the product goes to the person who needs it most. But that's not the case here. Everybody needs it. And especially, you know, if we can't afford to pay a lot, but we still need to go into work, and let's say we still need to use public transport, those are the people who need it most. So I am completely with you, Mike. You need that toilet paper, and I hope the production is being ramped up and you get your toilet paper soon.
Let's bring in Scott now, joining us from Germantown this morning. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how's it going?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I was just wondering, so far, I have held out. I haven't been, like, stockpiling or anything. We've had enough toilet paper at home, all that stuff. But I keep seeing, like you guys were saying, on Facebook and the media, all these empty shelves. I'm wondering, when stuff starts coming back, should I start stockpiling what I have?
Arad, now, what would you do in that situation where Scott hasn't decided to join in with what he is seeing there online, and yet when it's time for him to get something, he needs to get something?
This is such an interesting question, both from an ethical perspective and, you know, and in terms of, so it's a trade-off between seeing, like, I need to take care of myself, but I also need to take care of society. So if I start stockpiling, somebody else won't get it. So I care about myself. I also care about society. And Scott is great because he's been caring about society at this time and not stockpiling. So I think manufacturing will continue in certain industries for the most part. And I'm hoping that the necessities, the manufacturing keeps continuing while keeping the workers safe. Because from their perspective, they know that the product is needed, and which is, you know, in one sense, yes, it's more profitable for them, but they also know that people need it. So Scott should buy this toilet paper, maybe a little more, but it's a trade-off he has to make in terms of how much more he wants to purchase, and, you know, and then clean out the shelves pretty early before a person comes in an hour later.
We're talking about consumer behavior amid the COVID-19 pandemic with University of Michigan marketing professor Aradhana Krishna, who studies consumer behavior. What steps do you think brick and mortar stores or the government should take to prevent hoarding? Are you a business owner? How do you feel about your supply lines right now? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with Aradhana Krishna here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin laws against price gouging are now in effect after Governor Evers declared a state of emergency last week. And these laws generally mean that consumers shouldn't be charged more than 15% higher for goods or services than prices before the emergency started. So we're looking at the shopping frenzy as U.S. toilet paper sales were up 60% for the week that ended March 7th compared with the same period a year ago. Have you seen any empty shelves or long lines at stores? Have you noticed, you know, what other people are buying, how they've been stocking up? Have you seen instances of price gouging? We're at 800-642-1234. We have University of Michigan marketing professor Aradhana Krishna, who stays with us. Aradhana, let's look closer at consumer prices and what price gouging means. How do you see consumer prices effective? And do these price gouging laws that currently we have effect in Wisconsin, do they work?
So this is an interesting question. So typically when prices increase, some people might notice it and then, state it on social media that, look, prices are going up over here. And then the retailers, for example, eBay or Amazon, if the prices have been increased on their sites, will try to monitor it, and they may not be able to monitor it. But with the laws in effect, and there is typically also a number to call in for the public if they notice a price increase. And so if that is happening, so that's definitely the case in California. That's probably the case in Wisconsin as well, where there's a number given in for the public to call in if they see a price increase. Then you know, the public gets more vigilant. So the public is calling in. When the public calls in, the media notices it more. The media publishes it as well. The government notices it definitely much more because the number is being called in. And so if there is more like furor over the prices going up, then the manufacturers of those products also don't want to be associated with the price gouging. So they are going to take greater care that their products are not sold at those high prices. So now you have like four entities. You've got the consumers, you've got the retailers, you've got the government, and you've got the manufacturer watching out for it. So I think the price gouging laws can be very effective in stopping price gouging.
Let's take another call now. Deb is with us from Platteville. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to mention, at least in southern Wisconsin, we have a lot of small stores, like little groceries and stuff, and they still have toilet tissue and hand sanitizer, and it would be really nice if people would spend their money there.
So you're saying local stores, little mom and pops, do have supplies on hand. It's more like the big retailers, the big box stores that are running out of the supplies. Aradhana, do you see that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that's a really good point. So what happens in situations of anxiety and situations of fear, which is the kind of situation we are in now, is people really want the familiar. So people feel more protected by the familiar. People turn to the familiar. So here we are talking about familiar brands and familiar stores. So the reason that, you know, some brands have higher market share, are better known, are because more people are familiar with them. The same thing goes for the larger stores. More people shop in them. More people are familiar with them. So when something like the coronavirus strikes and we have greater anxiety, greater fear, we turn to this familiar. So that's where the stockouts happen. So you'll also see the familiar brands running out. So the familiar stores will run out, the big stores and the big brands. And I have to add also, so this is also a time when I think foreign brands will suffer, because foreign is less familiar. You want your familiarity over here. So if you go and try to purchase the brands which are not the Charmin toilet paper, you're more likely to get it. If you go to stores which are like the mom and pop stores, you are more likely to get your product. So that's exactly right.
Deb, thank you. Let's go to Andrew now in Heartland. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. What's your question?
Well, so I've got two comments, really. First, I think that what we're seeing as far as stores being depleted on different supplies is kind of indicative of the just-on-time delivery model that a lot of stores and manufacturing has adopted, because it's cheaper to run your business when you don't have such a large inventory to store. And secondly, I think you see a lot of Americans and people globally dashing to stores to stock up on supplies because they don't have anything stored at home at all, whether it's canned food or vegetables or whatever the case may be. They don't have any of that at home. And I think those are probably the two biggest driving factors into why people are panicked, along with a lot of media reports.
Andrew, thank you for those comments. Aradhana, starting with his first comment, just-in-time inventory, what impact does that have?
So I think Andrew is right. So with just-in-time inventory modeling, it'll take a little longer for the stockouts to be replenished. And so because the retail stores don't have much stock in hand, and Andrew's right. So so if these models also are being changed in real time as the situation demands right now, and he's absolutely right. And if I take his second question, which is that, so Andrew, just repeat your second question so that the public.
He said that, people just don't have a lot in their pantry. They don't stock up. And therefore, they go out every day to get things.
Yes, exactly. So there are many people who have much smaller houses, much smaller apartments that they are living in, and they don't have typically in a typical situation in normal life, they don't have the room to stock up, especially a bulky things like toilet paper. And so at this point, they have to go out if they want to stock up a little more, they have to go out and purchase things. So again, Andrew is right. His observations are right on the mark.
Andrew, thanks. Let's bring in Carolyn now in Sun Prairie with thoughts on this. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. I'm just wondering if anybody else, and if this is off topic, I apologize, but I am just wondering if anybody else is shocked and ashamed and embarrassed for this behavior, because I know I am, and I refuse to participate.
Carolyn, thank you. Aradhana, is there, are people feeling some embarrassment about these actions right now by consumers all around the country and here in Wisconsin?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, there is one part of us, the more ethical part of us, the part that cares about society, which is thinking that I really should not be doing this. I don't need a surgical mask. The doctor needs a surgical mask. I don't need hand sanitizers as much as doctors need hand sanitizers. So one does feel embarrassed, and one knows that if one stocks up a lot, then, people who come into the store an hour later will not get the product. So there is a level of embarrassment. So that, again, is adding to stress. So there is stress already because of personal safety concerns. And then on top of that, there are concerns like these, which are, am I doing the right thing? Is this behavior correct? And so, yes, so there are a lot of different stresses which we are facing at this time.
In our last minute, you've written books about how our senses affect our behavior. What senses right now are most active in driving consumers with COVID-19?
Oh, that's interesting. So, our senses are guiding us. All our senses are guiding us all the time. But when I was talking about visual indicators of demand and supply, so that is really being driven by our visual sense in terms of how we are reacting to the empty shelves and the point of purchase signs on the product rationing. But in terms of how we are feeling right now, it's absorbing everything around us. I mean, things are quiet where things were not quiet. There is nobody on the street. There is nobody. If we have to go to work, we find things on the roads empty. We find even our own offices more empty than before. We are not going to restaurants. We are not going to bars. The smells are changing. Mm. So all our senses are affected, and it affects us in a very subliminal, non-conscious way because our world has changed.
Well, Aradhana, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Aradhana Krishna, professor of marketing at the University of Michigan. Right now we're hearing So Fresh, So Clean by the hip-hop group Outkast. The song's chorus is about 20 seconds. How long doctors urge us to wash our hands with soap or sanitizer. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.